Well, greetings and welcome to our study for March 16th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 17:18 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again today for the study of the Crucible article, this time chapter 8, paragraph 9. I hope everyone's doing well. Joseph was born in Haran, and we're going to talk a bit about that. If I recall correctly now, Jacob first went to Haran after he had run away from his brother who was trying to kill him, and he was at that time, I believe, 77 years old, if I recall now, but it was certainly much younger than the age at which he begat Joseph, which was when he was 91 years old, or about 90 years old, with Jacob having been born as a twin with Isaac in the year 2045 or 2044 BCE, and with Joseph having been born 90 or 91 years after that, in the year 1954 BCE. Fascinatingly, it's the mirror date to Roger Bannister breaking the 4-minute mile, as described in some other of our articles. Now, Jacob was, we said, the father of Joseph, and we depicted Joseph as Poseidon, the god of Greek mythology. I mean, that's how the Greeks depicted Joseph, is what we concluded in the article Joseph and Own, and then also continued discussing it in the article Phoenix. And if we look at the father of Poseidon, his name was Cronus, and he married Rhea. And so Rhea is a combination of the names of the two wives of Jacob, Rachel and Leah. And the letters of their names are combined to form that name Rhea. But it's interesting because, of course, everything from the Greek mythology has been somehow transliterated or translated from Greek into English, so also some information may be lost in translation, possibly, but it looks remarkable because the father of Cronus is called Uranus, or Uranos, I should say, or also it means, well, that's the Greek name. The Roman form of the name is Cielus, which is Father Sky. And Father Sky is, in English, a very rare combination of letters, S-K, which is the same as the combination of letters in Isaac's name, I-S, and ignoring the vowels, just S-C, Isaac. So we have Father Sky as Isaac, who is the father of Cronus, and the symbol of Cronus is the sickle, an implement of harvest. And his son Poseidon, his implement is the trident, which is like a pitchfork, which is also an implement of harvest, which it fits well with Joseph, who was, we know, the great leader of Egypt, who stockpiled the grain to compensate or to relieve all the people of Egypt during the famine that occurred at the time, which according to Demetrius was 3,624 years after Adam, when the sons of Jacob went down to Egypt during the famine. And we computed it, therefore Jacob went down 1 year after that, which is 3,625 total years. But we had to add 11 more years because there were 22 generations, each of which would have a half a year inaccuracy on average, because of the rounding everything off to 1 year. as regards the age of the patriarchs when they had their son. So, since each of them is inaccurate by half a year, we have to add, a half a year on average to each of those 22, which makes 11 more years, and we got 36 plus, I should say 36, 25 plus 11 is 36, 36, another very conveniently remembered number, and 36, 36 subtracted from the time of Adam in our chronology, which is 55, 50, yields exactly 19, 14, which is the year, not only a major year in this common era of World War I, the beginning of that war, but also in the BCE time, it's the time when Joseph went down to Egypt in our chronology. Remarkably so. It worked out exactly according to what Demetrius said. He, having been an ancient Jewish historian who lived in the time of one of the Ptolemies of Egypt, a couple hundred years before the Common Era. Joseph was born in Haran, the son of Jacob, and Rachel, his mother, of course. His father Jacob being the son of Isaac, and his mother Rachel being the daughter of Laban of Haran, city of Paddan Aram. Joseph was the great-grandson of Abraham by means of Isaac, who we just mentioned was Father Sky of the Roman mythology and the Greek mythology similarly. Son of Abraham and Sarah was Isaac, and Isaac's wife Rebekah, she is the parallel person to the Greek goddess Gaia, as in, you know, the name Rebekah, which is like the name Bega, and the G A Bega is a very unusual, the letter G as the beginning of a woman's name is uncommon enough that Gaia can be identified as Bega, very similar names. So the wife of Father Sky is Gaia, who's Rebecca also. Isaac and Rebecca, Father Sky and Gaia. And aunt, she's the aunt of Rachel. Rebecca is the sister of Laban, the son of Bethuel. Now, why? Okay, wait a minute. Why is she the aunt of Rachel? Oh, that's right. Rachel was the daughter of Laban. Now, Joseph's grandfather, Laban, lived in Haran, Paddan Aram. We're not going to read 2 Chronicles chapter 6 today because it's a prayer of Solomon, so that's only, we're not going to read it publicly, but anyone interested can read it, certainly. And it's 42 verses long, which is a long reading also. But it's a prayer that Solomon made publicly to Jehovah, or Yahweh, the God of Israel. But Rebekah is the sister of Laban, son of Bethuel, which I just said, so that's right. So she's the aunt of the daughter of Laban, Rachel. And Joseph's grandfather, Laban. Grandfather? Wait a minute. Yeah, he was one of the grandfathers of Joseph, because his mother's father was Laban. And Laban lived in Haran, which is a place located in Paddan Aram. And that's where Laban lived. Jacob fell in love with Rachel soon after he got to Haran. And although he married Leah, he didn't mean to do that, but that was what happened because of the way that Laban tricked him. But it was Rachel that Joseph loved. This gave Joseph a most justified and honored birthright as firstborn son of Jacob by Jacob's beloved wife, Rachel, the firstborn of that wife, Rachel. As the Bible documents, Reuben, the firstborn son of Jacob by Leah, committed adultery with Bilhah, Jacob's concubine, the mother of brothers Dan and Naphtali. And thus Reuben forfeited what birthright he had legally obtained by virtue of his birth. The birthright that passed legally to Joseph as firstborn of Jacob's preferred wife, Rachel, was especially fitting. So it wasn't passed to the next son in age of the sons of Leah. It was passed to the firstborn son of the other wife, the second wife, who was actually the preferred wife, Rachel. Abraham, Joseph, and Joseph's mother, Rachel, have been much venerated by Muslims and Jews alike at their gravesites. The Ibrahimiya Canal and the Bar Yusuf, or Yusuf, were house certainly named after Abraham and Joseph of the Bible. It seems certain, even though they're probably named also after other later people, at least in the case of the Ibrahimiya Canal, that may have been named after a modern person of that name, but it's still certainly named after Abraham, as the Bar Yusuf is also certainly named after Joseph, but even more certainly is the Bar Yusuf named after Joseph. But as Jehovah's beloved people, we peaceably hold to the truth. That's right, we're not interested in having some kind of a battle of wits or something. That's not the point of all this. This is all about the truth. The historic fact of Joseph's birth is now established on the basis of the time we established as 1954 BCE, and also considering the given details of his family relationships. This is not just a religious matter, it is now historical. We determined the fact of his birth based on also the fact that there are personalities in the Greek mythology that fit all of these family relationships, even though the Greek mythology is greatly fantastical and confused, and as is all mythology. This is not just a religious matter. It is now historical. But the Greeks admired Egypt, and that's why there are parallels between Egyptian mythology and Greek mythology, and the Roman mythology parallels the Greek mythology. But the Greeks had a great interest in the more ancient culture of the Egyptians, apparently. That's why we see such amazing correlation. But we haven't discussed the correlations between the Greek and Egyptian so far in our studies of these articles, but we will probably. It is now historical. The birth of Joseph, according to Demetrius, the Jew living at the time of the Egyptian pharaoh Ptolemy IV, Philopater, from 221 to 205 BCE. That was when Demetrius was living and writing, and he writes that the birth of Joseph was in Heshvan, or the 8th Hebrew month, which places it very solidly in a later month of 1954, and we talk about how we determine the first month of the Hebrew year based on the equinox. That's talked about here, but we can do that now using the LEAP app, which is the lunar phase app on our Will of Jehovah website. We don't need to do it the way it was done here, using the time conversion tool and the equation of time, or using the moon phase tables, which are more correctly called the tables of Fred Espenac. And that's it for our study for today. Let's look at Amos chapter 7. This is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah... No, okay, first of all, let's do our Proverbs for today, little ones, Proverbs 14 and 2. If you noticed that I forgotten that, then well done. One fearing Jehovah may walk on upright, despising him those are who wayward take flight. Right. Remember, Jacob wrestled with the angel. He didn't back away or run away from the true God. He fought with the true God, became named Israel, which means contender with God. He was brave. He didn't fear God so much that he refused to fight him. Of course, he feared him, but he was willing to fight and attempt to defend himself. And he got injured during the fight. Despising him, those are who wayward take flight. The foolish, or the perverse, rather, in verse 2 of the American Standard Version, the perverse despise the true God. Okay? And the faithful don't despise him. They fear him and they love him. They seek for him and they are willing to listen to the true God, to Yahweh, Jehovah, and to take in the information that he gives. One way that he does give information is, of course, through his word. And that's the scripture from Proverbs for today, little ones. Amos chapter 7, this is what the sovereign Lord Jehovah caused me to see. And look, he was forming a locust swarm at the start of the coming up of the later sowing. And look, it was the later sowing after the mown grass of the king. Let's read what Adam Clark says about this in his commentary. We're not going to read Chronicles, but it says there, Solomon's prayer at the dedication of the temple. Clark comments that. And because it's a prayer, we're not going to read that today because it's very lengthy and it's also a little bit private. Between it's a public prayer that Solomon made, but we're not going to read it all because it wouldn't be appropriate to, because not everyone is interested, of course. So Amos chapter 6, the prophet reproves his people for indulging themselves in luxurious ease, Clark writes. This is from Amos 6, but we want Amos 7. In this chapter, God represents to Amos by three several visions the judgments he is about to bring on Israel. The first is a plague of locusts. And then, of course, we see he mentions at the end a total overthrow of Egypt. But we'll have to see that in the actual chapter itself. Israel will without fail go into exile in the last verse of Amos chapter 7. Israel will without fail go into exile from its own ground. Before we read it, let's just see what we know about what happened in Israel when they were invaded. I think it's instructive to see that. We see from 2 Kings 15 and 9, Pul, the king of Assyria, came into the land, and Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver, that his hands might prove to be with him, to strengthen the kingdom in his own hand. So he was bribed by Menahem, and he didn't take Israel into exile, because it says in verse 20 that the king of Assyria turned back, and he did not stay there in the land. So that's not the king of Assyria who took them into exile. And that is the king whom we call the King Pul also in our chronology, but he's one who's denied by most of the conventional chronologers. They ignore this king who ruled for something like 46 years. And we have him really well fit into our chronology. It works exceedingly well because we have included him. Whereas if we had said he's the same person as Tiglath-Pileser, we would have been wrong. If we look at 2 Kings 15 and 19, Pool the... right. No, that's the same one we just read. The other one is for, First Chronicles 5 and 26. That's the one. Consequently, the God of Israel stirred up the spirit of Pul, the king of Assyria, even the spirit of Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria. Pul or Tiglath-Pileser, that doesn't mean they're the same person necessarily, actually, because we saw that the first time it was the king was the first mention of Pul. It was not an exile. Whereas here, Tiglath-Pileser took into exile those of the Reubenites and the Gadites, 1 Chronicles 5 and 26, and of the half-tribe of Manasseh, and brought them to Halah and Habor and Hara and the river Gozan until this day. So it was Tiglath-Pileser, Tilgath, he's called there, but Tiglath-Pileser, he's called Tilgath-Pileser, which is the same name, but just corrupted, as these names tend to get from being translated between different languages and so on. But he's the one that was very interestingly talked about in the article by Jules Oppert. Where is it? Here it is. Right. Because Mr. Oppert mentions here that Menahem had dealings with Pul, and he reigned from 771 to 760. That is true in our chronology also. Let me see where that is. Over... I know it's here somewhere. Where is it? Did I move it somewhere? Let's see. Just for convenience? No. It's the Moses part 2. I just want to show the chronology of the kings. Where is it? There it is. Okay. Yeah, I didn't drag it around because I want to keep it in the place where I know where it is. That makes it a little harder to find. Here it is. So we see Menahem right here during the time 771 to 761 in our chronology, very similar, incredibly close to what is described as the time of Menahem by Mr. Oppert. But because that is earlier than the time of Tiglath-Pileser, or Tilgath-Pileser, the Assyrian king, then he couldn't have been the Pul. The king called Pul could not have been the same as Tiglath-Pileser, because it doesn't fit the chronology, since Tiglath-Pileser or Tilgath-Pileser or Tiglath-Pileser was the king, was a king who ruled from 744 BCE, not this early in time, 771 to 761. It doesn't fit that earlier time. And you see, Mr. Oppert mentioned in his article, biblical chronology fixed by cuneiform eclipses. See where we are here. Fixed by the eclipses of cuneiform inscriptions. That an article which I translated into English. That's the English translation of the title. But he mentioned here that Menahem ruled too early, and that even though at first he had tried to move back the king called Tiglath-Pileser to the date of 761, he later realized that that was wrong, and that that there was another Menahem. That was what he had said. He had concluded that there was another Menahem, but in his view, Pul was the same king as evidently as well. We should be careful what we say here, but in his view, his view may not agree with our view, but it seems to agree very well in terms of our chronology. So, but he's saying that the Menahem, right, they're all trying to make all of the statements in the Bible relate to the secular history, I guess we could call it, archaeological history, the inscriptions. So we need to be very careful about these sorts of things. But here it looks like Tiglath-Pileser took these people into exile from Israel in the northern kingdom during the time of his reign, which was 744, and that's after the time when Amos wrote 2 years before the earthquake, which is 786, since the eclipse was 784, and that's, we're assuming, the same time as the earthquake, and the eclipse and the earthquake, since they're both written about in the book of Amos, we're assuming that's the same date, 784, and that, which is the time of the eclipse, and it's 65 years before the exile of and the capture of Samaria, the exile of Israel as a whole, or after the capture of Samaria there was an exile, but that was after the time of Tiglath-Pileser, the exile from Samaria and the capture of Samaria. 65 years after the eclipse of 784 is when that was. And so 784 being the time written about by Amos as the time of the earthquake, he said he wrote 2 years before the time of the earthquake. Therefore, 786 is when the book of Amos was written, which almost agrees with what Clark said, because Clark says he writes... where do we have that book of Amos? That book of Amos again now. Where is it? Here it is. Clark, if we go back to chapter 1, of Amos, he says, he writes, I'm going to get down to it. He says, Amos 1:1, 2 years before the earthquake, he says, right there. That's when he wrote, and that's the same basic thing in any version of the Bible. This is the King James Version, I believe, that's used in Bible Hub, but we can use it just for this one case. It's the same in our translation, the 2 years before the earthquake. That part's the same. That's when he wrote. So he wrote, Clark writes in his commentary in the beginning that he wrote about 787 BCE, which we call in our chronology 786, very close to what Clark said about the time of the writing of the book of Amos. Certainly not a problem for it to be so close in agreement. However, ours is the one we prefer, of course. But however, also we should say that that preceded the time of Tiglath-Pileser and also the time of the capture of Samaria by Sargon II in 719 BCE, and Tiglath-Pileser being a ruler from about 745 BCE. So therefore we have this book of Amos as a prophetic book. It's written prior to the events, of course, as also shown by the fact that he mentions in verse 1 of chapter 1 that he wrote these things during the time of the king of Israel, who was called Jeroboam, the son of Joash, right, who was ruling from 825, I think we said, something like that, until, where is this? Yeah, I'm looking for it again here. this might be it. Where is Moses? Oh, that's the crucible. That's a different part of the crucible article. But there's Moses part one. Yes, it's over here, I think. It's hard to find these things sometimes. But anyway, well, he ruled up until about the time of the earthquake, and then he ran away. So that 784 is the latest time for the prophecy of Amos, according to that. But he also wrote during the time of Uzziah, who ruled up until 757, also from that same Moses part 2. Here it is. Okay, so I just found it by the first try there. But there it is, Jeroboam 826 to 785. That precedes Tiglath-Pileser by 40 years. And, you know, even at the latest of those two dates. And also, who is the second king? Azariah, who was Uzziah, the 758 or 757, also at his latest dates, precedes the time of Tiglath-Pileser. So there's no contradiction or no question that this was, in fact, a prophecy about the coming of Tiglath-Pileser to take exiles. It didn't prophesy about Pul because he didn't take exiles. He was bribed and went back. So let's read the book of Amos. We don't have any time to read it now. We're out of time. But anyway, it's here to read. We've only got a minute, 2 minutes. But this is important that we discuss this, and we can look at Clark's commentary and what the different things are that he wrote about there. He said in chapter 7, the locusts was a plague that was prophesied, and then a judgment by fire, and then a total overthrow of Israel. Those were the things prophesied. The rest of the chapter was the judgments against Amaziah, the priest of Bethel, right, who had actually accused Amos before the king of Israel, whose name was Jeroboam, and he was the second king by that name to rule in Israel. He was the son of Joash, as we saw from Amos 1 and 1, who was a descendant of Jehu, right? One of the sons of, in the line of Jehu, when Jehu began to rule, then that lineage of Jehu continued as kings of Israel for several generations. And that's all we have to study for today. That's today's video. This is March 16th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 1751 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.